The next case on our call today is number 031641, Eugenia Gonchacharova and Ksenia Kidanova. Yes. Mr. Farrell.
Police court,
counsel.
At stake in this case is whether my client, Ms. Eugenia Gonchacharova, and her teenage daughter, Ksenia Kidanova, are to be deported back to Russia, where they fled in August of 1998 due to increasing threats and violence as a result of their knowledge of and involvement in exposing the corruption of Russian officials. At issue here today is whether the government may deport them without telling us why their applications for asylum and withholding were denied, or telling us why the documents required of them by the immigration judge were reasonable for them to provide. First, this case should be remanded for the critical determination on the credibility issue. Despite noting in his opinion, the immigration judge said it was of extreme importance, the credibility of petitioners was of extreme importance in evaluating their claim. Despite saying that, he made no express finding of credibility whatsoever. He did make a clear finding that petitioner's testimony was consistent with their written application, a written application that he called inherently persuasive, and that he also found ample evidence that there was general wide-scale and rampant corruption in the country that supported the general country conditions at the time.
So their testimony, in other words, was compatible with what the record showed about the general country conditions at that time, am I right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Where is this city in Russia? Can you geographically place it for me?
Kaliningrad is in an isolated western province of Russia. It's actually, with the breakoff of other former Soviet republics, it's actually physically isolated from the rest of the country. It, however, continues to be of great importance to the federal government in Moscow because it has one of the few, if the only, port in the country that is remains unfrozen year-round. And has for that reason a number of military.
Kaliningrad is in East Prussia, isn't it?
Yes, it was, Your Honor. Formerly it was.
Part of the East.
But given the lack of an adverse credibility finding and the finding that they testified consistent with a persuasive written application, this implies a finding of credibility on the part of the immigration judge. And sitting by special designation in the Third Circuit, Justice Cudahy, in Kayemba v. Ashcroft, had observed that where petitioner's credibility has not been determined, the court must proceed as if the testimony is credible and address the question of whether there was substantial evidence to support the determination, assuming credibility.
What really happened here? I mean, why did the IJ not allow these individuals to prevail? Did he want corroboration of their story, or is it simply a matter that he just doesn't think their testimony meets the burden of proof?
Well, that is precisely our question on appeal, Your Honors. It is unclear, reading this decision and looking at the briefs, why the immigration judge decided the way he did.
It would have been entirely possible, would it have not, for the judge to say, well, I entirely believe these two ladies and their story. But, you know, we all come at a human situation from our own perspective, and perhaps the judge felt that they were simply mistaken in their estimation of the situation. They didn't understand the entire situation, so they didn't make their burden of proof, and they had no other evidence.
It's possible, Your Honor, but there again, we're speculating as to what was the basis for the immigration judge's decision. If he wanted to make that finding, he should have said so. If he was going to articulate that for some whatever reason he found them not credible, or if he found them credible but mistaken, as you suggest, then there should have been a discussion of the merits of their claim.
And we really don't know the difference, which of those is true, whether he found them credible but mistaken, or whether he simply thought that to be credible, their story needed corroborating evidence.
We absolutely do not know the basis. The government argues in its brief that the fact that the immigration judge required additional corroboration to specifically corroborate their claims, that implied a finding of incredibility. But as this court has found last week in Olalo v. Ashcroft, last November in Uwatchie v. Ashcroft, an immigration judge making an adverse credibility finding must specifically state the reasons, the cogent reasons for that finding, and tie it to the nexus of their claim. And there's no finding here whatsoever on that point. As a result, if the government is right in its brief, then the judge should have made that finding. He should have said so about the adverse credibility finding. And this case should be remanded for that reason alone. Conversely, if the judge did find him credible, or assumed credibility but didn't think there was enough corroboration to meet the standard or their burden of proof, then he should have discussed the merits of their claim. There's no discussion whatsoever of their claim for asylum or withholding on the basis of membership in a particular social group. They're all of one sentence discussing their claim for asylum on the basis of imputed political opinion, and that sentence is completely irrelevant to their claim. It's a simple finding that they were not politically active and they did not contribute to a political party, which was totally irrelevant to their imputed political opinion claim, which dealt with a whistleblower and the fact that her husband, or now former husband, was a tax investigator.
From your perspective, in other words, these two individuals are vulnerable because of their relationship to the whistleblower and the fact that they well might have knowledge of the corruption from that whistleblower.
Absolutely. The testimony in the record is that Ms. Goncharova had frequent conversations with her husband about his investigation and the corruption that he uncovered, and that when he was told on high to turn over all documents and the investigation was being closed, that he, along with Ms. Goncharova and his sister, made three boxes, copied documents, hid them in a coal bin in his sister's house that were later turned over in an effort to try and bring publicity to his plight. But there's no question that is the basis that we argue that family was being persecuted. Their relation to him and the imputed political opinion is they were also whistleblowers with evidence of official corruption. The second reason, Your Honors, that this case should be remanded is that it was unreasonable for the immigration judge to require my clients to provide the documents that he cited in his decision. The IJ, in his opinion, cited the Board of Immigration Appeals decision in N. Ray SMJ, where they discussed their corroboration rule. And they said, where there's evidence of general country conditions, and the rest of your claim relies on particular experiences that are not subject to easy verification, that corroboration is not required. Now, as the IJ went on to note, the board discussed in that, however, in cases where there's easy verification available for documents such as place of birth or media accounts of large-scale demonstrations, that should be provided where it's reasonable.
Well, Mr. Farrell, what do you do with the remarks in the government's brief that your clients really never provided some very basic documentary information, for instance, prove the fact of marriage, the fact that there's really nothing in the record document-wise, I understand, to take care of these basic facts. Well, you would expect someone to have documents, wouldn't you?
There was not a marriage certificate in the file. There were basic facts in terms of documentation for Ms. Goncharova and Ms. Kidnova in terms of their passport and where they're from, their place of birth, and that sort of thing. There was a death certificate for her husband. But the documents that you're citing are not the documents that the IJ cited as what they should have provided. Instead, he asked for documents from the tax service, documents from the prosecutor's office, documents from the governor's office, documents evidencing foul play in her husband and her sister-in-law's death, documents evidencing that her husband was forcibly detained in a mental hospital, though he was not ill. These were documents that would have had to have come from the very government authorities that were persecuting them. And documents which, even under N. Ray SMJ, they specifically noted that unreasonable demand should not be placed on asylum applicants, and they cited as an example of an unreasonable demand corroboration from the persecutor. And those are the documents that the IJ demanded, and those are the ones that he cited in his opinion, and for all we know, that's what he based his decision on. He also asked for affidavits and statements from friends or former colleagues. At the same time, back in Russia, at the same time ignoring the only letter that he had from a former colleague of her husband, Irina Bolotova, who discussed in her letter with what great difficulty she was able to get the one January 1998 fitness report from the IRS, the Russian equivalent of the IRS, discussing her husband.
Well, this woman who was from their town was never called on behalf of your client. Is that right?
Well, this particular woman, Irina Bolotova, is still in Kaliningrad. There was evidence that another individual who's from Chicago had carried a document for her sister that entailed, I believe, the death certificate of her husband, and had brought that in December of, I believe, 1999.
And that person was not called on behalf of the petitioner.
That person was not called, and we don't know what they would have testified to. But again, when you came to the immigration judge's decision, that's not what he said was missing. What he said was affidavits and statements from other colleagues, but ignoring at the same time that Ms. Bulatova had said, had asked not to be involved any further, that it was too dangerous, that people didn't want to talk about this. And I want to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Farrell. We'll hear now from Mr. Fiorino.
Good morning, members of the court. I'm Paul Fiorino for the Attorney General. Judge Ripple, you asked a few questions about whether this case involved a lack of corroboration or a failure of burden of proof. And it's really actually both. What the IJ found is that the petitioners in this case, though they seem to articulate a claim, they hadn't convinced him that everything that they claimed happened as it did.
He never made a specific credibility finding, though. That's
no, he did not.
One of the problems here, it seems to me.
I don't think that necessarily is a problem, Your Honor.
Aren't they entitled to get a credibility finding? Doesn't the case law support that point that counsel made?
I'm not aware that there's a requirement that in each and every instance the IJ has to make a specific credibility finding.
Well, was there any credibility finding? Can you point to anything in the record where he makes the credibility assessment?
What he did was he said
generally
that
or specifically. We know it's not in there specifically.
He said that her testimony is consistent with country conditions.
Right. So that seems to me goes to her favor.
Certainly, but the real issue is a finding of credibility or a finding of not credibility absolutely required in every case. What does a finding of credibility mean?
Well, I'm not sure it's absolutely required in every case, but seems to me it ought to be required if you're going to demand corroboration.
Well, I don't think that some circuits require that, Your Honor, but I don't think that this circuit requires that. To be found credible does not necessarily mean that the applicant meets the burden of proof. To be found credible does not mean that the immigration judge believes everything that the applicant says happened as it does. And to be found credible, or more in this case, the lack of an adverse credibility determination, does not establish as immutable fact the testimony of the applicant.
Doesn't there have to be an explanation of why it's reasonable to expect additional corroboration?
Absolutely, and there was in this case.
How did he handle that? I don't think he answered that question, did he?
Well, I think he did. He specifically said that This is a case involving documentation. The entire nature of...
Well, he said, I'd like to have additional corroboration, but he didn't explain why that was reasonable.
I think he did. He during his questioning of the petitioner, and we mentioned this exchange in our brief, he said, you know, your friend Ira was, or Irina, I believe, was able to find this document from the IRS, but wasn't able to go to your house. Why wasn't she able to get these things from your personal possession? And the petitioner said something like, I don't think she's that brave a woman. And that's certainly
well, that's
not adequate.
The question of were the documents available or could you get them? But before that, isn't there a question of why do you need them, it seems to me.
I think there ought to be
some indication of why you need them before you reach that other question.
Well, I think if the IJ did establish why she needed them.
But then he also didn't respond to her position as to why they weren't available and didn't respond to, there is some authority that says, you know, it's very difficult for the person who persecuted you to get the documents. I mean, he didn't address that at all.
Well,
I think
he did. I mean,
where? Yeah.
I can't give you a specific citation of the record, but as I remember in reading his opinion, he commented at length about how the petitioner was able to find some things, but not others. And even as Judge Ripple pointed out in questioning the petitioner's counsel, there's some very basic things that shouldn't have been hard to find. It has to do with identity.
Your colleague says that IJ really wasn't worried about those things. I mean, the IJ really wasn't worried about whether this woman was married to the guy.
Well, I think the IJ was worried about the nature of his work with the IRS. He rejected their application based on a failure of proof. And he says that there's not enough information with your testimony to establish that what you said happened as it did. And in that regard, I believe he commented about the lack of any documentation about what her husband did for the IRS. I mean, we have a document established that there was a fitness, that somebody requested to look into his fitness for a job, and that's it. No pay stubs, nothing to indicate what he had done, and the IJ did also comment about the absence of all of these articles that the petitioner testified to that allegedly were published in a newspaper to establish this. I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there that shouldn't have been very difficult to find, and it just wasn't there. And so the IJ said, well, this could have happened this way, and your testimony is credible if he's in fact said that. He didn't say it that way, but let's assume he said your testimony is credible, which means it's subject to belief. But in terms of your burden of proof before me, I don't know what happened, and so you fail your burden of proof. And more importantly, before this panel, before this court, the burden of proof is even more stringent because we have to look at what the record has, and the petitioner has to show that the evidence is so compelling that no reasonable fact finder could fail to find the requisite fear of persecution. So that's the real second issue before the court here, where we've been talking about corroboration and burden of proof and what is the legal impact of the absence of an explicit credibility determination. But really, at this juncture before the appellate court, the issue is, does this record compel reversal? Does this record compel a finding that the petitioner was persecuted or has a well-founded fear of persecution on account of any statutory basis? And we submit that it doesn't.
That compel language, where is that found?
I think it originally came from, I believe it originally came from a Supreme Court decision, Elias Zacharias, and been codified, I'm not sure if the word compel is, but it's been codified in Section 242. I think Section 242 says that the findings of fact are taken unless, I can't remember the exact language.
That's okay. We can both take a look at the computer.
Right, but that is a well-established standard. So we think that the IJ did not err in this case. We'd ask the court to affirm the decision.
Well, I just want to ask you about a recent case, Uwasi versus Ashcroft, one of our cases where, and I quote, the opinion says corroborating evidence is essential to bolster an otherwise unconvincing case. Of course, the IJ doesn't say that they were not credible. And to continue, but when an asylum applicant does testify credibly, it is not necessary for her to submit corroborating evidence in order to sustain her burden of proof. Isn't that exactly the situation we have here? Because when he does comment, he did say that her statement was consistent with the documentation that had been presented, right?
Right.
And her testimony was consistent with the country conditions.
Right.
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 So, I mean, isn't this the kind of situation that we have here? And that is why him making a determination with respect to her credibility directly has an impact on this unquote corroborated evidence.
Well, we would ask the court to look at the regulation, and I believe it's 208.13, which says credible testimony may be sufficient to meet the burden of proof. It doesn't say that it must be. I think it says that it may be. I think that word may is important because it gives the immigration judge the leverage and the flexibility. And after all, a reviewing court has to give the immigration judge deference.
And I understand there are other cases in our circuit that have suggested that corroboration becomes more or less important depending on the level of specificity and detail in the petitioner's story. But we had lots of specificity and detail in her story, didn't we?
I don't think we did.
In terms of the specifics, in terms of what happened there?
Well, with regard to her persecution, remember, another issue that I'm running out of time to talk about, but persecution of this petitioner, what actually happened to her? What actually happened to her? She was questioned by the police. and they ransacked her house. That itself is not past persecution. Okay, so she testified about threats that she had, and this is going
to
be future.
How about making your husband disappear? That counts?
I don't think it. That's not persecution to her.
And the people who helped them, the Lena and her brother. That's not the husband. That has no bearing on it.
It has to do with the motivation of the persecutor and what they're doing to the actual victim, who's the petitioner in this case. To say that someone had murdered her husband, which, by the way, we are not sure that actually happened, okay? That evidence is very sketchy. But was the persecutor trying to get at her specifically? Wasn't the target of this really her husband? I mean, I'm out of time, Your Honor, so I'd like to finish up quickly. She has suffered, okay, but that's not enough. Her burden of proof is to show that she was persecuted on account of a statutory ground. There's no evidence of it in the past, and with respect to her testimony, which the IJ did say was very vague, there's not enough evidence to compel that finding at this juncture.
I think we have the point, sir. Thank you very much, Mr. Fiorino. How much time does Mr. Farrell have? Mr. Farrell will make that 2 minutes.
Your Honor, thank you. First, let me respond to what counsel said with respect to Ms. Goncharova not being persecuted. The cases that the government cites in its own brief, which are two Ninth Circuit cases, and Molina v. INS, talks about attacks on the applicant's cousins coupled with threats were sufficient to establish past persecution. The other case the counsel cites is Lim v. INS, where it talks about death threats not enough to establish past persecution, but in that case, sufficient to establish a well-founded fear of future persecution. So certainly, what's in the record here, Ms. Goncharova's husband disappearing, her sister disappearing into a hospital, later found dead under mysterious circumstances, her sister-in-law found hanging by the neck a month later in her house, her son has disappeared, ransacking of their home, threats on the telephone, threats against her daughter, certainly it qualifies as persecution under any case that's cited in the government's brief. Secondly, I want to get to this from the question you had of the government's counsel. There was absolutely no discussion by the immigration judge as to why these documents were being required, the documents that he cited in his decision, why those documents are being required, why the immigration judge found that those documents were easily or reasonably available to the petitioner, and why the immigration judge disregarded their explanation, Ms. Goncharova's explanation, about why she didn't bring those documents with her. Now, under the Seventh Circuit case, DeBrota v. INS, that is a judicial error to disregard the applicant's reasoning without an explanation. Secondly, let me just say that this is not a case, given the earlier case I cited to you from the government's brief, this is not a case where if Ms. Goncharova and Ms. Kananova's testimony is believed, that they could not meet the standard of persecution. This case comes back to, was their testimony credible? And in Uwaki v. Ashcroft, in Georges v. Ashcroft, this court has held that credible testimony need not be corroborated. It is not required, contrary to the assertions in government's brief. I see that I'm out of time. I thank the court, and we ask the case to be remanded.
Thank you, Mr. Farrell. Mr. Farrell, are you with the firm of Jones Day?
I am at the firm of Jones Day.
I noticed that you have not personally signed a disclosure statement under Rule 26.1. Would you check with the clerk's office and make sure that detail is squared away?
Yes, sir. I believe I did, but there may have been some confusion. I substituted with a former counsel in our office.
I see. Our briefs don't contain it. If you would check and make sure it's on file,
Your Honor.
Would be appreciated. Again, our thanks to you. Mr. Fiorino, our thanks to you as well for a fine presentation. The case will be taken under advisement.